Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome back to the Women's Podcast. I'm Roisin Ingle. Now, we are delighted to bring you this conversation today with a woman we've all come to admire greatly. That is Vera Powell, the manager of the Irish women's soccer team. It was such a pleasure to talk to her about preparations for the World Cup, which is happening in Australia and New Zealand next month.
The problem is, as a coach, you have to be harsh by times. And there's moments that when I now have to tell players that they're not going to the World Cup, they hate me. If you cannot do that, then you have to really have to do another job. And at those moments, I wish I was doing another job. But it's for them worse than for me.
That was the voice of Vera Powell there. Now, the Women's Podcast has never, you might be surprised to learn, we have never been to the FAI headquarters in Santry in Dublin. But off we went to meet Powell on a break from training. It was fascinating to talk to her about everything from her management style. I wanted to find out if she had any Ted Lasso tendencies, to managing the issues around players' menstruation, and also finding out about a life that has been steeped in soccer from an early age, growing up as a triplet in the Netherlands. Vera Powell was brilliant. She was engaging, forthright, down to earth, and deeply impressive. She also doesn't shy away from difficult conversations. She spoke to us about the Ua Up the Ra controversy, when you'll remember she apologised after the team used that chant as part of their celebrations last October when they beat Scotland to qualify for the World Cup. She was also very open about the rape and sexual assault she went through as a young football player in the Netherlands. Being forced to speak out about it last summer was the worst moment of her life, she told me. Now, spoiler alert, we're probably not going to win the World Cup, but Powell did guarantee one thing, that she and her team are going to make us all very proud. Our first match is against the host country, Australia, on July 20th, and I really hope this conversation is the perfect preparation for all your FIFA Women's World Cup breakfast parties that I know you're going to have. Here she is, the Ireland manager, Vera Powell.
Vera Powell, we're so delighted to be here at the FAI HQ in Blanchardstown. The World Cup kicks off in Australia and New Zealand on the 20th of July, with Ireland playing in the opening match against Australia. So tell us what the mood is here at the moment in the camp, how you're feeling.
Well, first of all, thank you for having me. It's a great honour. The whole office is upside down. Everybody's working on it because people do not realize everything that has to be done and be organized before we leave. For example, we have very early deliveries towards Australia, so everything needs to be ordered, everything needs to be in place, all the kit needs to be done. We had a kit change, a sponsor change, which did not make life easier. But everybody is working on it, and it's magic.
So tell us when you fly out. Where will you fly out to, and where will you be based?
Well, we start here in Dublin. The championship players, so the second level in England, they already stop playing on the 30th of April. So they need to start very early. On the 12th of June, we start then with the group. And then there's a few players coming in a bit later. We play on the 22nd of June against Zambia. An African nation, because we play Nigeria in the tournament. And then on the 6th of July, we have the farewell game against France, which is in Talak Stadium, both of them. And then the next day we fly out with the first group. Unfortunately, we have to fly in two groups because there's not enough business seats. And of course, players need to rest and need to sleep.
Well, I like the fact that they're going business class, because maybe that wasn't the case, 10 years ago or that kind of thing when we had troubles. But things are a lot better now.
Yeah, well, we go to the other side of the world and we go to a World Cup. We have to perform. So this is not the usual treat, but this is absolutely necessary.
This is the first time we've qualified, or Irish women's have qualified for a World Cup. It's your first World Cup too.
As a coach. So it's not completely new, but new being on the pitch.
Exactly. And that's really special. But it seems to be that women's soccer has exploded and this is going to be a huge elevation of it.
Yeah, it's growing maybe a bit too fast.
Oh,
even.
Really?
Yeah. Because if it's growing so fast, then all the levels of facilitating the players are not growing with it. So there's lots and lots and lots of money, millions going into the top countries, whereas zero into the second level. And that is because it's growing too fast. They compare us now with men, that we have to facilitate ourselves. Mm. We're not there yet.
And for the first match against Australia on the 20th of July, it was going to be in a stadium for 40,000 people. It's now going to be 80,000. I mean, that's huge.
It is, but we played 20,000 in USA.
Okay.
That's still not 80,000.
No.
But at the end, whether it's 100 or 82,000, doesn't matter. The pitch is as big as normal and the goals are as big as normal. And there's 22 players on the pitch and there's a referee. So, we have the same tasks and it's the same game and the same rules.
And speaking of those 22 players, for some of our listeners who haven't been necessarily following and they might start, you're going to have a lot of new fans, let's say, because people who, it's just wonderful that people are watching and turning up for the matches. So set the scene for us a bit. Who should we be looking out for? Who are the star players? What is your approach to the World Cup?
You're now getting an answer that you expect. Every single player is a star.
Okay, that's good.
We do everything together, and without the teamwork and the connectivity that we have and the bond that we have, we would have never qualified. Katie McCabe is one of the faces, of course, and Denise O'Sullivan, but they cannot function without the others. And that is in our team to the extreme. We've done this through our teamwork, to working together, players and staff. And in my philosophy, the way I work is that nobody is bigger than anyone else. I always say the kit manager, if she's ill, then we have a real problem. When I fell ill, which was the case in one of the camps, everything went on because my assistant took over and we played the game as normal. So in our team, there's no stars. There's no difference in how we approach things. It's just that some have their faces a bit more in front of the camera than others.
Okay. That's a good diplomatic answer. I like it.
Yeah, but
it is true.
Yeah. It's the way we work.
And a lot of us are watching Ted Lasso, which is probably nothing like real life. And do you watch it?
I've watched a few episodes, yeah.
And in the dressing room, would you be sort of motivational, philosophical? Is that your, or are you very different to Ted?
No, it's very different.
In what way?
It's fantastic to see, but it's just enjoyable. It depends on the game, of course, and what it relates to, but I always come back to the tasks that we have on the pitch. And maybe the closest that came to Ted Lasso was at halftime in Scotland when we played the playoff, because at that moment we heard that Portugal had won 4-1 from Iceland, which was the opposite of what everybody had expected. Everybody had expected Iceland to win. Which made us in the position, if we would win, we would go straight to the World Cup instead of going to New Zealand. Well, that was a little bit of a Ted Lasso speech.
So what did you say?
Well, everybody was already in the corridor, so I called her back in. And the bench players were already on the bench outside. It was that close to start when I heard it, and called her back in. And we went into a huddle and said, listen, this is the situation. And if we do not let one ball in, if we keep our goal clean, I am sure that we will get that one chance. And if we score, we are going straight to the World Cup. So, and I'm absolutely sure that gave the last edge to, well, I don't know where they got the strength from, and I don't know where they got it from, but stopping Scotland from scoring, that was magic. And then that one magic moment of Denise O'Sullivan with the super pass to Ember, and the way that she took it and finished was of pure class. Yeah,
pure class. And what a beautiful moment. And we'll talk more about that later. But I want to look back at your career and go back to your early teens in the Netherlands. So first of all, even growing up, before you started playing football at 13, were you a sporty kind of person? Tell us about your life in Amsterdam.
Well, we only lived in Amsterdam for 3.5 years. Then my parents moved to a little town in the middle of the Netherlands. It's called Vianen. And that's actually where we grew up. I always say we because I'm one of a triplet.
So one girl and two boys?
Two boys. And I have an older sister, but she's 3.5 years older than I am. So that means that she had her own life. As a kid, that's a huge difference. So we played together. There were no girls in the neighborhood. That was a coincidence. There were only boys, so we played football on the street. And my brothers went to football, and the only sport that I could do was, it's called korfbal in the Netherlands, but it's kind of netball. You can compare it with netball. Very popular for girls. It's a mixed sport in the Netherlands, boys and girls together. Although you cannot defend each other, so I didn't like it at all because I was not allowed to defend the boys. But I had to wait till 13 before I could finally play football.
And you wanted to, because you would have kicked around with your brothers like all the time.
Yeah, every day on the street.
Were you better than them?
We were the same. We were just kids growing up. And when they had their games, the parents knew already. They would go to one side of the pitch and I would run along the pitch. Mm-hmm. So I could be on the height where the ball was. And then at the end of the game, I was also tired. I felt that I had played a little bit.
Mm-hmm. And you have said, I grew up as Vera. I didn't grow up as a girl. That means that I grew up like a boy with the values of boys and with the demands of boys. What do you mean by that? You've said that before. I haven't here.
Yeah, but it's true. We've done our research, Vera. It is true, yeah. No, but it's true. Yeah.
What does it mean in terms of the values? What did you feel that you had?
That you just have to do. And that's still a bit in my way because I just do what is necessary. And I call that product related. So if the aim is far away from us, I make the steps that's necessary to get to those aims. Whereas from women, it's expected that you are passive and that you look at others, of what others do, and maybe you follow and you push a little bit here and push a little bit there, but never in the front seat. And I grew up completely differently. So it's still difficult to cope with being to the attitude that's expected from me, because that's not me.
No. I presume your parents would have had a lot to do with that because they weren't socializing you necessarily in a stereotypical way.
No, my parents were very open. I've been lucky with that. They just saw me as Vera, and they did not treat me any different than the boys. For example, one time I had a fight on the street with a boy that was 3 years older or so than I was. And usually the parents would go out and go to the parents of the boy. And what happened was I cannot remember, we were arguing or something, so I kicked him, and he didn't do anything, so I kicked him again, and then he turned around and he kicked me, and then I came, and he really, I still know where it was, and he really hurt, so I went inside, mama. So she asked what happened, he kicked me, and the first question that she asked was, what did you do, because he didn't kick you for nothing.
Okay.
I said, I kicked him. She said, once? I said, no, twice. And she said, okay, I'll make a cup of tea of you. So she cuddled me, calmed me down. And she said, right, now you go to him and you go to apologize. So that is a fantastic example how my parents treated me, to not protect me, pamper me, but yeah, treat me like a boy, treat me like a kid, treat me like me.
Exactly, and not bring your gender into it or what's expected of a girl versus a boy.
Yeah. No, completely equal.
So when you started playing football, was that just, did you have this feeling like, this is what I'm supposed to be doing, I love this?
Yeah, I had to wait till 13, and my brothers were already playing at the club since 8 or 9 years old. So they were teaching me after training what they were doing at training, and nobody ever thought, let that girl play with them. It was just not in. It was not that people didn't want it. It was just, it wasn't there. Mm. So my dad wrote to the association and said, I cannot stop this girl anymore. Please, please let her, put her somewhere where she can play. So I got dispensation to play with the women, ladies, back then. The first one was about 10 years older.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so I was more than a mascot when I scored. we call it Jonas. They would hug me and throw me around. And but I could play, so the spark became a fire. And probably that has been different with my brothers, who could just, they had the easy way, they could play, and there was no barriers. So when I finally... when I could finally play, I made sure that I would never stop playing.
Yeah, well, we're talking about the very start of women's football, like a completely different world. I mean, what was it like, and what were the barriers, or what were the kind of obstacles at that point? Attitudes, I suppose, people's attitudes towards
it. We trained only at Friday night with the club at 8:30 at night after football, and most of the times we had to play before football started. So at 8 o'clock in the morning or at 7:30 in the morning. And then our club was good because we played at 12 o'clock. But there were really ridiculous timings. We actually felt it. Truly, we had to play before football started.
Right.
Yeah.
You played for 5 different clubs, I think, 4 in the Netherlands, 1 in Italy. And then you went into management. So... again, at that time, there wasn't really such a thing as women in management, I imagine, when you started out. So what was your thought process of that? Was it just, I'm going to do this, I want to do this?
Yeah, I was a boy in that sense.
Yeah.
I mean, nothing in myself wanted to be a boy, but I grew up like a boy, so I acted like a boy. And when I was 8 years old, I knew already that I wanted to go to the University of Physical Education. And when I was about 14, I knew that I didn't want to teach, but I wanted to go there. I wanted to have a good theoretical base. And I knew that after that, I would go to the Institute of Sports to get my coaching licenses, because that was the only way to be full-time in football. And I didn't want anything else in football. So at the age of 23, I think, I got my A license. And I started to coach next to football, and I did also sports management. So I worked for the FA in football. So in my feeling, I was a professional because everything was in football, and everything was in technical tasks.
I mean, we've moved on a good bit in lots of different ways, but it's still quite rare. I mean, I was looking up, only 12 of the 32 countries in the World Cup are managed by women. So we've still a long way to go, but. You know, you're sort of a pioneer in it then. And do you think it's changing a lot or not?
The problem is that everybody talks a good game, but nobody opens the opportunities. We have now here finally another female managing the under-16 team. So that's a step. And we do a lot to educate women, but we have to do more to open up opportunities to actually work in football and have a career. Mm. And the biggest problem, and I think everybody needs to be aware of that, when a man starts coaching or starts his career in football or in anywhere, they look at his potential. He can grow and he's been good at the course. With women, you have to prove yourself. Because you have to have experience. Where do you get it if you never get the opportunity? It's all known, but it is so true. And they look at what you don't have. And if they cannot find what you not have, then they put in that your communication skills are not good. That is what they always put in. And then they have a reason to not appoint you. And I've said it many times, and it is nothing against Phil Neville, because I like him as a person. But the fact that he was appointed as national coach is the biggest mistake that England has done. Not because he is not good enough, but because he did not have to go through the process. He had no experience. He had no experience in coaching. He had coached one game or so. And all the women that applied, and also the women that were asked to apply, I was one of them, I was asked to apply, did not even get an interview.
Wow.
And they said, because we were afraid of the scrutiny of the press. That's what Campbell said.
When was that?
This was in 2016, I think, 18. What was it?
So they decided that women wouldn't be able to handle the scrutiny, and therefore, I mean, which is absolutely so patronising
and
ridiculous.
And that is why I use it as example, not because I've got anything against Phil Neville, because he was asked at a reception, hey, that's nice for you. Ah, no, that's nothing. Ah, come into the office the next morning, 12 o'clock he signed. So that is literally how it went. It was humiliation of all those women who worked so hard and who have delivered so much quality in her career already and being treated like that. Mm-hmm. And it's the major example, and that is why I use it, because it shows how it works, and it still works like that.
Yeah. Now, things were difficult for you in football as well, and you've been so open. And I think when anyone speaks about their own experiences, it's really helpful to people. So thank you for speaking. I'm talking about your being raped and sexually assaulted at an early stage in your football career. The post that you made public about that was very powerful. People were very moved, I think, and grateful, as I said, because of your courage. So, but was it difficult to do that, and still difficult to speak about it?
It was the worst moment in my life. But I had no choice. It was on the same moment that an article went viral in the Netherlands of a Dutch newspaper with the whole story in it. But I thought, I'm working in Ireland and I cannot not inform the people in Ireland. And the only reason why I did it was because after I had made 5 claims and the fifth time I'd spoken 2.5 hours, suddenly a research had to be put in, an investigation that had to be done quickly. Well, after a year, nothing had come out yet. And it showed that research was manipulated, that the ones who could testify were not called, they were not asked. My closest colleagues were not asked. The question of power abuse under which sexual abuse was taken out of the, how do you call that, the questions, the research questions, investigation questions, without telling me. Okay. So it finished up being a cultural investigation, and that the Dutch FA had to honour their heroes a bit better. Mm. That was the outcome. And nothing was researched, nothing was investigated. So I had no way out, because the only thing that came out was, oh, we feel so sorry because Vera had not a good time with us, but now things are better. Whereas now that research was manipulated, and now I was treated as a zero. And from the moment I did that till now, the very moment now as we hear, there's been zero care for me. So I think that the reason why I had to go to public was because it was the only way to find my life back. Because nobody else cares for you. Nobody else cares for you till the moment that you're honest yourself. Honest to yourself, honest to people around you. And I thought, people need to know what I'm carrying with me, because I cannot go on like this. I just can't anymore.
And did you worry about being sued or putting it out there in that way of getting a comeback?
Well, the newspaper had protected me. They said, we're not going to put the names in, because then you get most likely problems. You will get into problems. And they said, we also. They advised me not to name the names. That was the same in the investigation. But they knew the name. The investigators knew the name.
You've talked about how after you went public with the rape and sexual assault allegations, your husband Bert van Lingen said he'd got the real Vera back. So did speaking out give you a kind of liberation? Did it feel different after you'd made that post?
I'm completely a different person. I'm not sure if you want to put that in now, but last week I've done one interview and it's called About Life, and in the Netherlands, and that was all about what it did to me, because people warn you when you go out to not do it. So many people said to me, without exactly knowing what was wrong, but they knew there was things wrong, and I knew that I was not treated well by the Dutch FA, they said, Vera, get a life. Leave it behind you. You don't need those people. You're bigger than they are. Get on with your life. Don't worry too much. Is it still that problem? And you can listen to that. I've done that for years and years, but it doesn't help you. And when you go out, everything they warn you for, that you get destroyed, that people would are going to tell lies, that it's turned around, that you come second victim, that you're victimized, you call it like that?
Yeah, again. Victimized, again.
It's all happening to the extreme. It's far worse than what people have told me. But I have my life back. And I am strong enough to talk about it. And I want to say to all the women who've experienced it and who do not dare to speak up, do it. Speak up, please. This interview last week on the TV was about that. And I've received so many reactions of women who didn't dare and say, now I'm going to do it. And even women close to me who started to cry seeing me because they said, this is the first time that I'm saying that I'm raped too. And I think that is important. Maybe what I've experienced and the fact that I had to come out with it, maybe it helps women and men, because men also can experience these things, that they find the guts to do something with it, because it's worth it. You get your life back, you become stronger, you have a future again.
What age were you when that happened?
22.
So you're a very young woman.
But the biggest problem was after it. Because he tried to kick me out of football immediately.
And this was a Dutch official?
Yeah.
In football?
Yeah. Yeah. There was a letter written 2 days after I kicked him out of my room and to stop it. And in that letter was written that I was thrown out of the team because I was working for the Dutch FA, so I couldn't play in the team anymore. And that was signed by Rinus Michels, but it was a fake sign. And I kept that letter, I still have it. So I'm so grateful that I've kept it, because that shows that what I've experienced after, what I've been telling about what happened after, is part of that. And he started with the extreme bad stories about me. And that's still going on. So the people who never ask me, because nobody asks you when that happens, everybody was talking about me, that I was fighting with everybody, that you cannot work with me, unbearable to be close to, all those things. He had thrown out that I had touched players. He said she became a lesbian, as if he knew that I wasn't a lesbian or that I was heterosexual. So you actually admit what you've done, right, by saying that. And that I touched players and, the most horrible things.
So basically maligning your name and trying to sully your name in order to shut you up.
Yeah, and then he started to physically abuse me by letting me do sprint exercises before national team activities, by forcing me to do weight lifting before national team activity, to put me in the middle for a whole training session, whereas you'd usually change after 2 minutes. Mm. But I was so strong because I trained with a professional club, FC Utrecht, and with boys, of course, with men. The second team of the professional club, and I trained 5 times a week there, so I was so much stronger than everybody else. He couldn't harm me. And then he threw out my best mates, and by throwing out my best mates every week another one, I understood if I'm not quitting now, then he's going on and he's destroying more lives. So for 8 months I've not been playing football. A year I've not been playing for the national team. And in that camp where he actually admitted to me that his only aim at that camp was to destroy me, he literally said it to me, we had a game against Italy. And where others maybe, and that is maybe because I grew up as a boy, where others would sit down in a corner, I played the best games of my life. I had like this basic instinct, you do not take my passion away. So I played one of the best games of my life, and I earned a contract there to go to Italy. So I was called the moment I had no way to go, and I left to go to Italy. I escaped to Italy, which has been fantastic, because I have there I was free again. There's nobody harming me, and the people in Italy were so warm, and I've experienced so much joy there that it was fantastic. But I came back to play in the national team again when he left.
You came back, yeah. And I mean, I think you made the point earlier, like people don't realise how long lasting the effects of that is, and people telling you to just get over it and to just move on, you know.
Yeah, people didn't know that because I didn't admit it. I didn't even tell my husband.
You didn't tell your husband?
No, I said to him, I'm sexually abused, but I did not say what. It could be a lot, eh?
Yeah.
And I didn't say what. So I kept it for myself. Also for my friends. And this interview this week, there are four of my friends called me. They said, I've only been crying during this interview because I didn't know. And I'm wondering, why did I not see anything? But also people at home need to realize that if you're so programmed to hide it, then you hide it. And nobody is to blame but myself, that I haven't opened myself earlier.
Yeah, but when you, going back to what Bert, your husband, said, that he'd got the real Vera back. Do you feel like that? Yeah. It was kind of a bringing yourself back together again when you talked about it.
Yeah, I said last week, I pictured it as a huge brown door in front of me. And I can draw it. If there's a drawer here, I can tell exactly how and what and when. And there was a woman coming to me and said, I recognize that because for me it was an iron door. And I was trying to get away. And that's a way to cope with it. And when that door was suddenly gone after trauma therapy, from one day on the other, suddenly that door was completely gone. I could open and my husband said, yeah, you're there. I'm finding Vera back again.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads, generally, for most people, are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact? You can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
I want to ask you about something else that's kind of difficult as well. The National Women's Soccer League report, which you have been fighting against, the allegations in that. There were saying that you were body shaming players, and you've strongly denied this, and you're saying it's totally incorrect. And you're working with a US lawyer who is also representing other people who've been accused of things, including a lot of other female coaches. So I wanted to ask you about that in the context of whether you think there's a kind of double standard when it comes to judging how male and female coaches handle players. For example, Manchester City manager Pep Guardiola publicly questioned the physical condition of one of his players, Calvin Phillips, earlier this year, saying he was overweight. And there wasn't any criticism of him. He was largely saluted as being a no-nonsense coach who wouldn't stand for his players not being in peak condition. But you were accused of body-shaming your Houston Dash players. So are female coaches not allowed to be tough and demanding? Do you think there is a double standard there?
Well, Thomas Newkirk can explain it very, very well, because I did not even, I didn't talk about the body at all. In the first thing I do when I come somewhere and there is a weight scale in the dressing room, I take it out. I don't want to know fat percentages. There's even in the report that somebody had pulled up her shirt to wipe her face and that she had to pull it down because I said you can see your fat belly. I mean, what on earth? What do people think? And he explained it in a way that they see you. They come from families. It's an upper class sport. They come from families where the mother is always the one who is keeping the balance in the family. So when there's a fight, she's the one who calms everybody down and who sits there with a cup of tea to comfort people, but never the one who's demanding. And as a coach, if you look like your mum, that's probably what it is. You cannot understand that that mum is then telling you what to do and not to do on the pitch. Because outside the pitch, I had no contact at all with players because I never do. Only if it's related to football and I need contact. But the coaches, the female coaches who use F words, who go out drinking with the players, who swear, who abuse referees, they have no problem. Those are the ones that can stay, but the ones, I never swear, I never shout to players, I do not punish because of everything what I experience, even push-ups when you lose a little game, not with me, it's just not happening with me. I never put a player on the bench because of behavior. I'm coaching her and I make her understand or think of the result of her behavior. So it's such rubbish, it's such the opposite of who I am, so it makes me so angry. Can you believe I've not even read the report? I cannot read the report. What we've just been talking about, what I've experienced, and then knowing that you're put in the same phrase as rapists, it's just absolutely nonsense. And we push it till after the World Cup because the World Cup needs my attention now. And after the World Cup, we're going to decide if we're going to put in a lawsuit or not.
Is that something that, you know, you feel tarnishes your reputation, even though you're very strongly denying the things that are in it?
Yeah, of course, because it will always be on the internet. Type my name in and you get it. And there's been companies who have methods to bring that down on the list on Google. But you have to pick up a mortgage to do that. It really cost like 70,000, 100,000 euros.
To try and manage that online reputation.
And do I need to pay the rest of my life for a few lunatics who bring lies out, who think that they are okay, and nobody ever asks me? Mm. I mean, the investigators, they stopped me from recording it because they had already made their mind up. Mm. And that is the worst. Those investigators, they should be held accounted for. I'm not going to ruin my life because of two people who bring out lies. I just don't do it. And I'm sorry, maybe I'm the Dutch directness, but I'm not doing that. I don't let it happen. Wrong person. They've chosen the wrong person, really.
I wanted to talk to you about menstruation, if you don't mm-hmm. mind, because I find it a fascinating subject. It's something we talk about on the podcast a lot in different contexts. And something I
very
learned,
good. We yeah, finally talk about it.
Exactly. Yeah. And something I learned from doing the research to talk to you is that our ovulatory cycles actually do impact in terms of the science behind whether we get injured at certain times of our cycle and all that kind of thing. And in Chelsea, I think they do their training schedule according to the women's players' cycles. How far into that have you gone with your team?
Well, in 1998 already, I was dealing with it. We had 670 players in a program in Scotland when I was coach there. After 1 year, you think, that goes well. The second year, hey, are we now lucky? But after 6 years and zero ACL injuries, 670 players, you
and
do
we
something
just explain
right.
ACL injuries are sort of knee injuries. Is
yeah, it's a ligament, the cruciate ligament in the knee that is ruptured. And that, you bring that with you your whole life. It can be repaired, you can back to playing, but at the age of 50 or 60, you will get problems with your knee. So it's long term.
Yeah.
It's lifelong. And the key thing is Chelsea is going pretty far. It's not as far as people think it is, but they are experimenting with getting weight training and strength training at certain moments. The method that I developed with the knowledge that was there and I keep developing is the combination of coordination, explosiveness, and stability to put that together into a program to protect players. Mm. And when they are just before their menstruation, instead of pampering them, to actually be clearer and I always say, today I'm on your backside, because to keep them awake. The problem is it's a coordination. It's a coordination problem. So if you let them go and not, they need to do a little bit quiet, you actually say it's okay to not be sharp. And if it's okay to not be sharp, you rupture your ACL. But fatigue is coming in. If your periodization is not good, and that means the planning of your training session related to the games.
It's called periodization.
Yeah.
I like it. I've never heard that before.
Then you get a fatigued nerve system. So the coordination that's already disturbed is then also following from a fatigued nerve system. And if your nerve system is fatigued, the triggers are going slower. And that means that you have a bigger chance on ACL injuries because your muscles do not contract on the right moment and in the right order. If I could explain it simple, and that aspect has never been looked at. There's now a research coming out that the problem is that women wear men's boots. The biggest rubbish that I can think of, really, because there's nothing wrong with the boots. The boots are so light, there's nothing wrong, and that the heel is supported on another rubbish. I had to test the so-called women boots when I was still a player, and I threw them out because I got injured from them. Yeah. Because people think that women need something else. You need a good periodization. You need coaches and sports scientists who know what they are doing. And starting from football, not from the muscle. That is the big thing. The first thing you need to stop is weightlifting on the rack. Just stop the weightlifting, the squats. Okay. Stop them.
And not just when people are on their period, but generally.
Well, generally, because you come into the vulnerable moment in the month. And if there's what I experience, because I always ask with every single injury, if there's three variables coming together, then you rupture your ACL. So it's the moment in your cycle. Then, for example, you had a fight at home. You're emotionally not there, and you're very busy. To combine work and
those
playing.
Three things coming together.
If three of those emotional variables are coming together, then it snaps.
Wow. It's really interesting. The other thing about periods is some teams are deciding to go away from white shorts, but the Irish team have decided to keep them. What was the discussion around that? Because some people have favoured darker shorts.
Well, let me first start with 50 years, nobody cared.
Yeah, exactly.
Nobody cared for 50 years. One person shouts something in December and the whole world cannot wear white shorts anymore. Whatever colour you have, white shorts you cannot wear. And if you wear them, you're abusing women. That is literally what's
been
said.
Is that what people are saying?
That's what people
are
saying.
Seems a bit.
Because, yeah. Now, we tend to have a green shirt. Well, there's here a green shirt.
Yes.
That's the same color as grass, right?
Yeah.
So if we are in completely green, can you imagine what happens when you play on the floodlights?
You'll be able to see them.
You just don't see each other. And everybody knows that. And if you don't know it, grab video of a team completely in green against, for example, in white, and you see it immediately. So we have to wear white shorts. So what do? And finally, it's there. We order protective underwear. So the players are getting protective underwear so that we protect them from exposing themselves if there's a little accident.
Because, period underwear is such a game changer, isn't it?
It is.
From when we were, younger women. So they would have special period knickers, I suppose.
It's only the last year in Europe. It was already in the US. And I wanted to order it immediately, but then, people are not tuned into it so much. Yeah, why we've never done it? And also the players, why? But now the players understand why we can do something about it. And let's do it. Let's not expose ourselves.
Tell me about your, going back to the Ted Lasso, the dressing room thing, your general style as a manager. Do you need to be liked? Is that important to you? Do you want to be liked by the women on the team?
The problem is, as a coach, you have to be harsh by times. And there's moments that when I now have to tell players that they're not going to the World Cup, they hate me. If you cannot do that, then you have to really have to do another job. And at those moments, I wish I was doing another job. But it's for them worse than for me. I am myself, and I'm not changing. But I think that I'm a coach that is there to help players. I'm not there for the players to help me. So when the players are always first, I think that I'm good for players. I treat players well, and I am on the barricades for players, for safety, for health, and for their pattern. But I have to take them out of their comfort zone. Mm. Because if I'm nice and I keep them in their comfort zone and I never pull them out of that comfort zone, they will never go into the unknown. And that means they will always stay the same and they would not have qualified. But players need to learn that me, being a Dutch woman, I can be very direct in that. But now they feel she's direct because she cares about us and not because anything else. Mm-hmm. So last week I said to Taro Hanlon, I said, do you know why I'm constantly on coaching you and very direct in it? And she said, well, because I need to do things better. I said, no, because I think that you have a real career in front of you. And that is why it's necessary. So I do explain, I do know that by times I can be very, very direct. That's the only way to become a top athlete.
Okay,
fair enough. I do it with heart.
You do it with heart. That's lovely. Listen, let's talk about the lovely day you were talked about earlier with Amber Barrett and that amazing thing that was then overshadowed by the singing of Ooh Ah Up the Ra in the dressing room, which you came out the following morning. I think you did something like 4 hours of media the next day. You owned that mistake. You were very much... But I'm just thinking of the moment when it was explained to you why it was wrong, because you're not from this culture. You wouldn't know what Ooh Ah Up the Ra meant or how it could hurt and offend people.
I would have not recognized it.
Yeah, when you heard what was happening, it had to be explained to you, I presume, in that moment.
I had slept 2 hours and doing already interviews in the morning, because that is what you do as a coach. And our communication manager, Garrett Maher, said, Vera, can you come along? And he explained what happened. And I asked, what's the background? And he explained the background of it. I said, so we hurt people. He said, yes, but they didn't mean anything. I said, so that does not matter. That, and we were on the exact same page. We have to apologize, because as soon as you hurt one person, you do something wrong. Whatever people say, if you mean it or not mean it, as soon as you hurt one person, you have to apologize and you have to stop doing it. And it's coming probably because we have Sinterklaas and, sorry to say it, Black Pete in the Netherlands. That's a children's fairy tale. It's like you have Santa Claus at Christmas. But we have Sinterklaas with the helpers and Black Pete. And Sinterklaas is white. So there was a huge movement of that were going back to the colonial times. And slavery. And we said, what is this? For me, it's just making somebody unrecognizable. And it had nothing to do with black people, really. That is what the people, how the people felt. So there was a lot of research. We cannot help that black people is black. And I was struggling with the fact, why is this a problem? And from outside, foreigners didn't understand why, that we did not understand that that was a problem. But it's like the song. If you always sing, it's always there. It's part of your culture. You don't, yeah, there they have a problem. But we do not mean it. We didn't mean it. But there was one person in a talk show. And he said, was a black man. And he said, very calm. He said, listen, I am hurt. Is that not enough to stop it? And that was the moment that I understood why it had to change. Because even if it's only one person that's hurt, it's not okay anymore. And I think that came up later. I thought, why I was so sure at that moment immediately. And I think because that was just behind me. And here I felt probably the same thing. It was, even if there's only one person, then you have to stop it.
Let's talk about our chances in the World Cup, Vera. Are we going to win?
No. Hey, but we're going to make you proud.
How proud?
Very proud. What we do, we are going to take the best and everything out of it. But if we say we're going to win the World Cup, then we can only be disappointed. Because we start against Australia, the opening game, 82,000 people, you said it already. We don't know how we will react on. I think we will react very good, but...
I hope we don't get stage fright. That's what I'm worried about.
Yeah, that can happen. It can happen. Then we play My task to avoid that, but yeah. I will do my best. I promise I will do my best.
Meditation, maybe, I don't know.
Whatever. Then we play Canada, Olympic champion. Then Nigeria, the best team of Africa, who should be ranked so much higher but cannot get points because they have to play in Africa. Then if we go through, whatever happens, let's say we go through, then we face the European champions, England. And if that ball is not going against in, but against the crossbar and the post, and we win the penalty kicks, hey, let's dream on. Then we have to play USA,
okay,
the world champion.
No problem.
Oh, well, we need to beat them all, right? So aiming for winning the World Cup is just not realistic. Our realistic aim is that every game we start to win the game, we prepare to win the game, and then we are taking the best out of ourselves. We do not collapse. And then I hope that Ireland is proud and all the Irish people have enjoyed themselves and we see how far we go.
How have you found the response from the Irish people? You seem to have been embraced and welcomed very much since you've been here.
Yeah, it's just absolutely amazing. They kept me on my feet in the difficult times. Winning the Manager of the Year award from all the different RTE, the sports writers, the fans. I became Manager of the World everywhere. And that was just 2 days after this report came out. Mm-hmm. They could have easily said to take a coach of a world champion. That in itself is fantastic because I felt safe here. I didn't have to explain myself. Not in July when I came out with my statement, not in, what was it, December, I think, early December when this ridiculous report came out. I feel home here.
Oh, it's lovely. Well, I want you to be at home here. I have a couple of questions from two young players. Can I just call them out to you? Two 14-year-olds.
Of course.
They're actually very good questions, and I'll just play it and you can hear it.
Hi, Vera. My name is Maisie. I'm 14 years old. My question is, do you ever think the gender pay gap in football will ever be levelled in my lifetime? Thank you.
Wow.
It's amazing.
It's amazing. Who would have thought that equal pay would come in Ireland? Ireland was the third country in the world doing it, but the only country so far who did it on the moment that we had never qualified for finals. So on the moment that we only cost money, we did not bring in money. And I'm so proud of that. If that goes on, FIFA has now promised that for the next World Cup, the prize money will be exactly the same as for the men. And that means already a huge increase. If you see how we grow, the level of the men, I'm not sure how far. I think that will go down because we cannot go on like this.
Yeah.
But the fact that the major stars earn amongst what their values is already a huge step. It can only grow from here.
Brilliant. And then there's one more question.
Hi, Vera. My name's Georgia and I'm 14 years old. And this is my question. I play football and I love it. However, I know some girls at my age drop out. And I was wondering, when you were 14, did you ever consider dropping out? And if you did, what made you keep going and stick at it?
Wow, also a very, very good question. Now, I never, ever wanted to drop out. Never. because the spark was just became a fire and that could not be distinguished. But the thing is, you always have to ask, why do your teammates drop out? Is the activity not good? Is the coaching, does that need to be on the highest standard? Do you get the same facilities as the boys? Do they feel valued in your team? Those are the questions you first have to ask. And if that is all okay, if they feel valued, if you have good facilities, if you've got good quality activities, by times people choose other directions. But I'm sure if you do that well, there's many, many more girls that will keep playing. And that is why we're fighting so much that we get an under-15 national league now in Ireland. Next year it will start. And a national under-15 team. Because that age group that she's talking about, it's so true. We lose too many players. So we have to do something.
Well, they're both really brilliant players. And I might try and get you to come and see them play sometime. And see if you might spot them for the future.
I will.
Finally, just before we go, people listening who've maybe never watched a soccer match in their life, there's lots of women who maybe don't, and others who are thinking, oh, I'll have a look. What is it that they can expect, and what are they going to, why should they tune in and support us? Which obviously everyone's going to, but maybe just encouraging people.
The first thing I would say, come to the stadium. Then I don't have to explain anymore, because then you will be hooked. I think what irritates me on the men's game is all the diving, all the fighting with each other, all the fights against the referee.
I don't like the spitting. Do women do the spitting as well?
Me never.
But go on anyway.
But I think it's the pure sport. When we play the sport, we play it because it's pure and within the rules of the game, and we try to get everything out of it. I think that pure sport atmosphere is something that attracts people to our games.
Yeah. 4 decades, I think you've been in. How long? 4 decades, 5 decades you've been playing. It just must be a fantastic feeling that you're going off with a team under you to the World Cup.
Especially with Ireland, because these Tigers are just, we just belong to each other. It is such a great group of women who are so inclusive, who always get their country first. It's never about them, it's always about the team. And that is such a joy to work with.
Okay, well, Vera Powell, thank you so much for talking on the Women's Podcast. And we hope we'll be talking to you afterwards, and it'll be an amazing celebration. I'm sure there'll be an open-top bus down O'Connell Street, and we're all rooting for you. And thank you so much for your time today.
I hope everybody will enjoy themselves.
I'm sure they will. And I know you'll make us proud.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That's all we have time for. Our thanks to Vera Powell and to everyone in the FAI for facilitating that interview. Thanks also to those two young soccer players, Maisie and Georgia Norton, who gave her such great questions. Come on, you women in green. The podcast is produced by Suzanne Brennan, Katie Mellett and me, Roisin Ingle, with JJ Vernon on sound. Mind yourselves, coy gig, and I will talk to you next time.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.